Up next from the Center for Social Innovation at Stanford, Hewlett-Packard Senior Vice President Tony Prophet explains how the IT industry's larger supply chain is gaining competitive advantage by reducing its environmental footprint. On Social Innovation Conversations.
Hi, I'm Chris Dagelmeier, the Executive Director of the Center for Social Innovation.
And I'm Eric Nie, the Managing Editor of the Stanford Social Innovation Review.
Welcome to Social Innovation Conversations. Today, we're excited to bring you a new presentation from the Responsible Supply Chain Conference. At the Graduate School of Business, we work hard to educate leaders to solve the world's toughest social and environmental problems, all of which are felt sorely in most industries' supply chains. Our center partners with the Global Supply Chain Management Forum to explore, document, and share best practices in responsible supply chains.
To join us for the next Responsible Supply Chain Conference, register at gsb.stanford.edu/ser. And now, here's our presentation from the Responsible Supply Chain Conference.
Our next speaker is from Hewlett-Packard, Tony Prophet. He's the Senior Vice President of the Personal Systems Group, and also of the worldwide supply chain operations. So Tony is in charge of very much the end-to-end supply chain at PSG, at the Personal Systems Group, starting with the development of the products from the sourcing, from the manufacturing, and also the product returned and recycling. So this is really the complete end-to-end cycle. So please join me in welcoming Tony Prophet from the...
Thanks for the warm welcome, and I'm very pleased to be here. I offer my personal thanks and those of HP for including us in this this important event. I'd like to leave you, when we walk away, with three or four key messages. One is that social and environmental responsibility is a core value for HP. So it's not like a program du jour. It's a long-standing part of HP's culture. It's pervasive through all that we do throughout the supply chain. So it's a critical and an essential part of the fabric of the company. Second point is this: with the scale of HP, we truly believe that we can make a difference. Now, some of the facts I'm going to share with you are that HP is a highly leveraged company. So we have many, many supply partners. And a lot of things that happen on behalf of HP don't necessarily happen with HP-badged employees, but they happen through the employees of our supply partners and people at the second and third tier in the supply chain. So we believe by leading by example in the supply chain and our operations and in our focus on reducing energy in our operations, that we can set an example for our partners that we work with throughout the industry. And hopefully I'll leave you with an impression of a strong impression of passion for social and environmental issues at HP. We have a large contingent here. This is kind of a home field advantage with HP World Headquarters being very close by. But quite a few people in the room, some of them have traveled, though, from quite a ways to be here, as a testimony of the importance of these issues to HP and the supply chain professionals that that comprise HP. So I'll give you a brief overview of the agenda for today. We'll talk to you very, very briefly and not at length at all about HP, just grounding you. Obviously, it's a well-known company, but just grounding you in some of the key facts to get your arms around the scale and the scope of HP's operation and of the business. Then talk to you about our global citizenship priorities. And we really think about these as four pillars, the first being design for the environment. That includes both the product and the packaging associated with it. The second being responsible manufacturing, and that includes the activities that happen in our own factories and those of our partners, and the leadership position that we have taken historically and continue to take in setting a standard for the code of conduct on issues of ethics and labor and the environment with our supply partners and in countries far from here, and trying to raise the waterline there. The third is efficient energy usage, both our usage within our factories and those of our partners, energy usage within the logistics network by which we get those products to our partners, as well as the actual energy usage of the products. And finally, product reuse and recycling. We have a short video to show you, about 4 minutes, that'll show you some of the things that happen in one of our recycling centers in the U.S. It's in Roseville, California, and gets you a sense of, you know, what happens there, the scale of it, and the passion of some of our employees around these issues. And at the end, of course, leave some time for questions. So start with a brief overview of HP for those of you that aren't familiar with the specifics of the company. You know, broad portfolio in the business, one of the broadest in the technology business, from handheld devices, iPacs, all the way up to, we call them superdomes. You know, think of those as, massive supercomputers. So broad scale and on the hardware side, a significant services and consulting business. You'd be surprised at the scale of that. And in global operations, significant global operations. So we're a Fortune 11 company, on track this year to being the leading IT company in the world. Significant scale in the operations, operating in 170 countries with about 156,000 employees worldwide. Just a couple of facts to give you some sense of the scale of HP, in particularly on the IT infrastructure side. 2 out of 3 credit card transactions are handled by HP Technologies. 106 of the world's 120 world stock exchanges are powered by HP Technologies. Half the printers active in the world today and sold in the world today are HP printers. So just a few points to give you the impact, a sense of the scale of the operation and why we are passionate about leadership here and how it can make a difference with directly with the products that we sell and the services that we offer, as well as broadly throughout the industry. So personally, I believe, and I think there's a school of thought on Wall Street that companies that have a high standard and set a high standard for social and environmental responsibilities are companies ultimately, over the long term, that will have excellent returns to their shareholders and to their stakeholders. So I'm a personal believer in that. I know that the HP and its core values, that's integral to our core values. Let me share you a little bit of the recent history, financial history of HP. You can see on the left the FY06 results. So our fiscal year is a little bit offset from the calendar year. Our fiscal year closed in October of 2006, our FY06. At about $92 billion. And the primary elements of the business are the Personal Systems Group. Think of that as notebooks, desktop PCs, digital TVs now, and handheld devices. The iPad is the most familiar example of that. The Imaging and Printing Group, think about that as printers, cameras, and increasingly print services that we offer to enterprise and medium-sized businesses as well. Enterprise storage and systems, think of that as the infrastructure that really drives the internet and data centers, largely a hardware business. And then, as I mentioned earlier, a significant scale services and software business. So those are the elements that comprise the company. We came off of 2006 with a significant revenue growth of about 6%, 7% when adjusted for currency. So, so for a company of this scale, nearly $100 billion to grow at that rate, something that we're quite proud of. We just announced our results for fiscal year, for Q1 of fiscal year 2007, and very, very strong results, really led by the PC business, with revenue up 17%, notebook revenue up 40%. So you can see the significant transition from desktop to notebook and the growth of the notebook business. That's one of the core vectors that's driving our strategies going forward. So I'm going to shift gears now and talk about the supply chain that supports this enterprise. And I mentioned earlier that the supply chain is necessarily global. Significant operations, as you can imagine, in China, but likewise in India, South Africa, Brazil, I mean, pretty much any major manufacturing region you can imagine, and the United States and Japan as well, right? Any major manufacturing region you can imagine, we have significant operations there. One of the things that's less transparent from the outside in is post the merger, the HP Compaq merger, the supply chain has been dramatically simplified, and it makes it easier to execute a strategy and have leverage and actually move the needle because of the significant consolidation of the two supply chains as they've been brought together. Thirdly is we have a significantly leveraged model. So HP owns many factories, but a lot of our activities happen through the factories of our partners. So some of the strategies I'm going to share with you are the ways with which we take our core values and our programs and how we inspire and lead our partners who also participate in the value added for HP's customers in the same direction that we're leading, and broadly we believe that benefits the industry at large because those partners likewise serve some of our competitors. So first point to talk with procurement. We believe that HP has the largest procurement supply chain in the IT industry. So it's about $50 billion of components that are procured for HP, our worldwide material spend. Surprisingly consolidated. So for a company of $50 billion of procurement purchases, more or less, we only have about 600 suppliers. So surprisingly consolidated, again, makes it a little bit easier to have leverage. Now, those 600 suppliers, their operations comprise about 300,000 people and about 1,000 sites worldwide. So big scale, but big suppliers, big supplier relationships, and you'll see some of the names of those folks a little bit later on. And so, you know, our core priorities there are really, how do we translate our values to our partners? How do we create awareness and educate them so that our strategies are aligned and our actions are aligned? And then how do we translate that tangibly into action initially by their self-assessment of how they're doing along following the HP values and driving industry standard values as well as our direct auditing of their activities firsthand in their facilities. The second major area is on the logistics front. I won't go through all these facts with you here, but you can see some of the facts there that demonstrate the cadence and the speed at which the HP supply chain makes products coming out of the factories literally by the second. So our focus here is to simplify that supply chain, to have as few touches and as few miles as possible between the point of manufacture and the ultimate customer, simplifying those networks when product is moving in containers or in trucks, making sure those trucks are as full as possible and in the most carbon efficient, because it's necessarily often and generally almost exclusively the most cost efficient way is to move them in something that has a lower carbon footprint. So where things are moving by air, try to move them by sea. That's one of the big vectors that we're moving to going forward and trying to reduce both our carbon footprint as well as trying to reduce the cost and improve the efficiency of our operations. And then reducing the weight of our products. It's a market imperative. Notebooks, for example, lighter is better. And likewise, it's a cost imperative. We're moving significant weights over large distances, and less weight is lower freight bills. So now some of the four priorities, and they kind of frame the balance of the presentation going forward. So, as stated earlier, design for the environment, responsible manufacturing and supply chain practices, efficient energy usage, both in our operations, those of our partners, as well as the products that we sell and services that we deliver, then product reuse and recycling. Probably there's not much debate in this room, but in other rooms there might be a debate of, the business imperative for this. And HP has a long history of leadership and putting a focus and an emphasis on this as a core part of its culture. And over time now seeing that evolve from that form of leadership to being a point of competitive differentiation, we believe. Last year, for example, we responded to over $5 billion of RFPs, requests for proposals from customers, where they're asking us about these issues and what we're doing along these lines. Likewise, in Europe, about half of all the RFPs that come out, have these issues are integral to them, and where the customer is measuring us on our performance along the social and environmental responsibility dimensions. Likewise, there's a expanding web and network of regulations. You're all familiar with them, or many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with them, from the restriction of hazardous substances, the ROHS initiative in Europe, and the WE recycling initiative in Europe, and those things expanding around the world, is seeing similar regulation in China and Japan, and we hope as similar as possible that they're restricting the same chemicals. So an expanding web of regulations that make it an imperative that you're compliant and that you're removing hazardous materials from your product, just as a precursor to actually to sell your products into the marketplace. So, what was at one point a standing on principle has now become, we believe, a competitive advantage and a prerequisite to playing going forward. And then finally, is the visibility on these issues that that we have received and others have received from the from NGOs, non-governmental organizations. And you know, HP has taken, I think, a very progressive stance of partnering and transparency with the NGOs around these issues rather than taking an adversarial posture. And I think that served us well. We're going to highlight one of the important partnerships as we get to the back end of this with the World Wildlife Fund. So design for the environment. Now, as I alluded to earlier, this is really a more and more a market imperative. You know, who wants to carry a heavier portable device, right? So lighter is better, and lighter is lower carbon footprint generally, and better for the environment. You know, more energy efficiency in a portable device means longer battery life. So the more energy efficient the device is, the longer the battery lasts, the more useful the product is to the consumer. Then in the enterprise world, energy consumption in data centers is a big, big deal. I'm sure you've heard about it. You know, the issue of just getting the energy and siting the data center, as well as the cost of the energy, are critical issues for enterprise customers. So for those products as well, it's the alignment of the principles of protecting the environment and being a good corporate steward and citizen, aligning with the market, and that's something that HP is encouraged to see the pace at which that alignment is happening, and then finally the removal of toxic substances from the product, and we've been progressive. We believe and have tried to establish a position of leadership here, and increasingly that's become the rule of law in many countries around the world. Let me give you just a couple examples on the energy efficiency front. So in 2006, we launched, and I think many of you that are in the tech industry are kind of familiar with the put and take and the push and pull in the microprocessor world around issues of energy efficiency. And if you're close to it, you're also familiar with HP taking a position of leadership and positioning those microprocessors that were out in the forefront, regardless of which manufacturer they came from, in terms of their energy efficiency. So in 2006, we launched a line of servers that reduced energy consumption by about 24% compared to previous generation technology. In 2007, for our all-in-one printing devices, we've come up with a power-saving mode where the device it uses just 1 watt of energy when it's in a standby mode. So a significant reduction in the idle time, because most of the time if you have a printer at home, you're typically not printing. It's typically plugged in an idle mode. So by focusing on that idle mode, that's the principal mode it operates in, has significant leverage on its energy consumption. We are innovating a set of products called Blade PCs. So rather than having the full functionality of a PC, a desktop device sitting at your desktop, that you're connected to a network through a relatively thin client, a device that doesn't have a hard drive in it, to a rack of blades, think about blades like blade servers, that have significantly lower, about 10% the energy cost that a desktop PC would have. Again, focused on enterprise and basically large business customers to reduce their energy costs coming out of PCs. And then finally, our C-class servers, the latest class of servers that we launched, use about two-thirds of the energy of the previous generation. So many examples of products that we have brought to market recently, because of the principles, but also because it makes commercial sense, that these are differentiators that customers increasingly are focused on, CIOs are increasingly focused on, and consumers are focused on, that make a difference in their decisions as to which products to purchase with and which technology companies to ally with. One of the biggest dimensions here and levers here is the packaging material. And the packaging material, its weight and volume, is a principal driver of our transportation cost. And the materials that we choose to use have the primary impact on what material ends up going to a landfill, unfortunately, versus being able to be recycled or reused. So I'm going to highlight three examples here. This page highlights three examples here from the PC part of our business. And the latter page is going to highlight one example from the supplies part of our imaging and printing group. So the first example is a transition that we're making today in the United States. And in this example, we're transitioning from EPS, expanded polystyrene foam, you're very familiar with, that kind of crumbles into the white bubbles, right? It's a very, very common packaging material, and it can be recycled. It can be recycled, but it's high volume, takes up a lot of space. So we're transitioning from that to molded paper pulp. So you can see, more familiar, think about more like the cartons that you buy an egg in the grocery store, much more like that. And the benefits that we expect to see from this, one, we're reusing a recycled material, the molded pulp is a recycled material, and a reduction of about 366,000 cubic feet of material, this is for the U.S. market, per year, by the use of these materials versus using the expanded polystyrene foam. In the notebook, which for us are principally built in Asia and transported for the most part by air, but on to a lesser degree by sea, so for the notebook, we have transitioned in certain markets away from wood pallets, which have a lot of, you know, constraints around them and requirements around them in terms of being treated and the issues around infestation and insects, right? Transition from them to plastic pallets. And the plastic pallets individually weigh about 28 pounds less than the wood pallet that it replaced. And so the net benefit on an annual basis is about 2.8 million pounds per year of reduced weight transported via air freight, and obviously, you know, collateral reduction in the carbon impact of these products. Then finally, you know, I think everyone's familiar with an example of when you get a package from UPS or FedEx from a technology company or many, many companies around the world, and you have this huge box, and inside it is a memory stick or something, right? And we certainly have those examples as well. So in our aftermarket options business, where often the product can be quite small, we transition from, you see on the left there, the big box filled with the inflatable bags to using envelopes to the greatest extent possible to reduce the volume and the weight and the cost and the environmental impact of those transactions with our partners. And again, you see a good alignment here because these things are lower carbon footprint, generally good for the environment or universally good for the environment, but they're also economically incented, right? So more and more, as the cost of virgin materials and the cost of fuel continue to rise, you know, there will be more and more a convergence between things that are right for the environment also being right for the bottom line of corporations. Let me shift gears and talk about an example from our imaging and printing business. And the intent here was to significantly reduce the amount of packaging material. Now, if you've been in Best Buy, Walmart, etc., you see the supplies that go along with our printing material and the ways in which they're displayed. And our intent was to reduce the amount of packaging material and to eliminate PVC from those packaging materials. And so, you know, PET, the material of which beverage bottles are made out of, think of a Coke bottle, right? Well, we've shifted from PVC to recycled PET in these packaging materials. And wherever possible, we move from plastic to a paperboard wherever possible. And the net result has been a reduction of, in total weight, of about 45% and a reduction of PVCs of about 6 million pounds. That's our expected reduction annualized for the year. So, you know, significant reduction in both, you know, potentially hazardous substance as well as the total weight of packaging material that hopefully gets recycled at the back end of the life cycle of the product. Now I'll talk to you about how we collaborate with our supply partners. And, you know, so these responsible supply chain practices that you've heard a lot about today, you'll hear more about as the day goes on, are a core part of the values and an essential part of the discipline in our supply chain professionals. We really believe our scale does make an advantage. One of the key points I want to make is that HP is not doing this alone. So some of the initiatives we're sharing, many of the companies that are represented in the room from the technology industry are our partners in this. And so it is probably not advisable, it may be possible, for a company like HP to go out alone and work in a supply base where it shares that supply base with many other technology companies and independently try to change the world. And the tack that we've taken on this is really to collaborate with with other players and leaders in the technology industry to try to set a uniform set of standards and not have HP have one standard and Dell have a different standard and Apple have yet another standard, but to try to collaborate to a common set of standards to drive the suppliers, both the builders of systems as well as the manufacturers of components, to a common set of standards. And that standard that we're driving to, the first step for us, of course, was launching our own supplier code of conduct, which we did in 2002. And then along with one or two other of these partners, we were instrumental in 2005 circa 2005 timeframe of launching this electronic industry code of conduct. So what is this electronic industry code of conduct? You know, it's a common set of principles and guidelines that govern the behavior of the supply base. Let me just give you, ground you a little bit on the names on the chart here. So, you know, I heard someone from Apple in the room as well. So you have, in the food chain here, you have customers like Best Buy, you know, and they're next thing to the customer from a consumer. So channel customers, and they obviously have an influence on our decisions. Then you have OEMs, you know, Dell, IBM, HP, Apple, etc. Forgive me if I left someone off who's in the room here today, right? And then you have manufacturers of systems, integrators of systems, and manufacturers of components. So the familiar manufacturers of components, Intel and AMD, make microprocessors. But then there's a layer in the IT industry food chain of folks that integrate systems. The familiar name in the U.S. are the Flextronics and the Sanminas of the world. And then if you were in Taiwan or China, the familiar names would be Foxconn and Quanta, are familiar names over there that are in this food chain, and they operate factories on the behalf of integrators of branded companies, and we operate our own factories as well, but in some cases we ally with these companies. And so it's important that, one, it's a collective. It was not one company trying to drive its own flavor of the answer here, but a consortia that has enough gravity that it can move the needle and point and determine where true north is on these issues. That involves both the component suppliers as well as the integrators and the operators of the relatively large factories, and these factories are all around the world, but many of them are also in China. And how it works is, initially, periodic questionnaires, a self-assessment by these suppliers on how they stack up on the standards of the code, right? And over time, getting more invasive with actual audits, you go on there, and this is a cultural issue, right, of, you know, getting inside another company and telling them effectively how you like them to operate the company, but it's essential because their operations affect the brand of all the companies that they support. So a more invasive step that involves firsthand audits of the operations of these companies. And we see this as part of a hierarchy, starting with, for us, the evolution for HP, our policy and our own code of conduct, the supplier self-assessment, our personal, you know, first-hand audit of their operations. Necessarily, the audit doesn't have teeth unless there's some sort of corrective action and some consequence that results from you know, persistent noncompliance. And then finally, and most importantly, so that it doesn't become a continuous cycle of policing, that we actually work to build the capabilities of the companies to do this themselves, because we're dealing typically with just the first tier of the major companies that supply components to us, or the major companies that might integrate systems on our behalf, and beneath them is another tier of companies that might make little sheet metal details and pieces of plastic and wiring harnesses and PCBs, printed circuit boards that aren't populated. There's a whole other tier that we typically don't see and can't reach to because we do not have direct procurement relationships with them. So it's important that we move just not only to enforce these standards in the tier that we can see, but that we move to change their culture so that they can do the same on our behalf, and you can get a force multiplier through our supply partners in this regard. And so this can ultimately come from something that is more of a policing thing, that something organically is really changing the center of gravity of where these issues lie. So in terms of building capabilities, the last leg, you know, HP has embarked in 2006 on, you know, we think a pretty innovative and pioneering effort, the Focused Improvement Supplies Initiative. And so at this point, it's HP specific. Maybe time we might like to draw others into this, but this is, we believe, is the next wave of beyond self-assessment and auditing and a common code to how you actually build these capabilities on the ground with, you know, day in and day out seminars at the factory level. So you're not dealing with necessarily the top executives of the company that are the salespeople that you interact with on a day in and day out basis. You're dealing with the person that's actually running the factory, and wherever that factory may be, it could be in Taiwan, China, Malaysia, et cetera, right? And training them, increasing their awareness of these important issues of environmental health and safety and labor laws and just basic ethics. and trying to get alignment down at the factory level. So that's something that we've embarked on this year. We have the leaders of this initiative for the company are in the room here, and I'm sure there might be some questions here. They'll be happy to help you with those questions. And the innovators really that pioneered this for HP, and we hope, you know, it's a pioneering effort for the whole industry. I want to hit briefly on efficient energy usage of both from our operations as well as from our products. HP has had a long focus here, but now we've put a very sharp point on it with a goal. And the goal that we've established is to reduce the CO2 impact, greenhouse gas impact of our operations and our products by 20% by 2010. I'll talk to you a little bit about that and the our partner who is allied with us in this. Now, if you think about HP's operations and the impact of our carbon footprint, it's relatively small. It's about 1.5 million metric tons of CO2 out of the global, 25,000 million tons, right? So we're 1.5 out of 25,000. However, the visibility of the brand, the company, and the influence this has in influencing the decisions of our partners, we think it's important, and it's important to control what you can control, and this is it. So we have committed to in November 2006 a partnership with the World Wildlife Fund, where we'll do several specific things. The first is that we will report our emissions. We'll measure and report our emissions, right, by a standard protocol that's espoused and developed by the World Economic Forum, right, that we'll reduce the combined emissions of our high-volume products and of our operations by 20% by 2010. That we'll work in collaboration with the World Wildlife Fund to educate our stakeholders. Those include, obviously, our employees, our shareholders, and maybe most importantly, our supply base. And that we'll partner with them on a technology basis to try to move the state of science further. And the first one of these is a study on the effects of climate change on the wildlife and habitats of the Alaskan Bering Sea. So an issue that's important, critically important to WWF, and likewise important to us as well. It's our first collaboration with them in terms of moving the state of the science forward. Shifting to our products, I think many are familiar with in the U.S. the Energy Star standards that you see on appliances around the world. Around the U.S. Those standards are now applied to PCs as well. And so this year we're coming out with the first HP products, which are Energy Star compliant, and it's our mid and high range business PC products. And so what does this mean? That they go from being more or less 65% to 75% efficient, energy efficient, right? The balance being waste and heat, to 80% energy efficient. So that 80% standard, that's the benchmark, and we're launching our first wave of products that are compliant. We think that makes us a leader in this space. We leave the market to judge the facts that whether or not we're a leader there or not. And then in the data center, energy usage is a huge issue. And versus just simply getting the power, siting a data center becomes harder and harder. A multi-megawatt facility and just getting the electrical lines that are able to bring the power to where it needs to be. Then once all the power is in there and it all comes out as heat, it's cooling the data center. And about half of the energy used in a data center is used simply for cooling it because of the inefficiency, the heat, the amount of heat that the data center generates. And then paying for the power and then the environmental impact of using the power and any water associated with the cooling requirements. So a typical data center, its energy bills are about $2.5 to $3 million a year, and it uses about as much energy as 2,000 typical homes in the U.S., right? And just think that's probably 20,000 homes in Japan, for example. So, big energy footprint, big energy impact, making a difference there, can make a difference. So we have really two levers here that we're driving. The first is by a more efficient class of servers, or C-class servers, I pointed to those earlier, that are about 33% more efficient in terms of energy consumption, and then a dynamic smart cooling family of technologies that are focused around the data center to measure the temperature in the data center in many more finite points, to manage the data center like zones rather than managing it like one box, right? And having variable flow devices that more actively and precisely manage the environment in the data center that can reduce the energy consumption on the cooling side by about 40%. And finally is recycling. And This is going to be my first technology test of the day, because I'm going to have to start a video here. And we have two recycling centers in the U.S., one in Nashville, one in Roseville, California. And the video really presents, gives you a sense of inside the box of what's really happening there. These centers together recycle about 1.5 million pounds annually, a million and a half pounds per month of electronics. And big impact material that otherwise would have gone to the landfill. This is a service that we offer. And with that, I will roll the video here. Okay, so I hope you get a sense of the passion. And you know, obviously, you know, these folks are on the tip of the sword, right? But I think that they're indicative of the passion that we see and that I see personally, and I'm so impressed with of the supply chain and engineering professionals, you know, throughout HP for, you know, issues around the environment and how integral it is to what it means to be a member of the HP family. Now, we have two of the leaders here for the program that have made big contributions, and I'm acknowledging them for two reasons. One, because of leadership, and two, for the Q&A session, they may have some of the answers to the more pointed questions or detailed questions that you have. But first, we have Judy Glazier. If you could stand up, please. Judy, and she's the Director of Social and Environmental Responsibility Operations for HP, and Bonnie Nixon-Gardner, who is the manager for social and environmental responsibilities programs for HP. And they do the real work and the real heavy lifting, so I just want to acknowledge your contribution and the difference that you've made to HP and leadership you've displayed. So we're maybe a tiny bit over on time, but we may have time for a question or two.
We have time for questions, but first, thank you.
Ali Rahimi, Cisco Systems. Would you please tell us a little bit about the green procurement initiatives in Japan? What's your point of view? Because they're very similar to what you're doing, especially in terms of the eco-design and green procurement initiatives.
Maybe give me a little more background, because I'm not...
Green procurement is the supply chain management, basically, in Japan, being in effect for almost, you know, 20 years. The companies are doing very similar initiatives like yours in terms of, you know, implementations of the environmentally sound and friendly.
Right. And so, you know, historically, the Japanese have been leaders here in this space. And you see it not just in this IT industry. I mean, you see it broadly in many, many industries. I've only been with HP for about a year, but I came from the air conditioning industry. And, you know, likewise there, you know, the Japanese were on the forefront in green procurement, green systems, green technology. And, you know, obviously a lot of it has to do with the macroeconomics there, the cost of fuel there, energy policy there, and a government that's driving energy policy. And it may be a view that makes their products more competitive in a global marketplace. So I don't know if I'm specifically getting to your question, Ali, but, you know, my view, it's very much lined up with, you know, HP's view of the world, that the leadership that's been demonstrated by Japanese companies, you know, historically, I think more and more you see companies that are based in Europe and America and in Asia broadly, likewise, understanding that being green, you know, makes a difference, and that the leadership they've displayed, and I think the Prius we talked about earlier, you know, a great example. If you looked at air conditioning systems, you know, huge differences in the energy consumption of an air conditioning system built in Japan versus one that may be built and sold elsewhere. So, you know, very close alignment with that and the values that HP has stood for quite a while.
My name is Shay Mott, and I'm from Aravo Solutions, a software company in San Francisco. Graduated from a school up north a bit here. My question has to do with really scale, the question of scalability. And I know that Professor Lee has been a big advocate of sort of the agile supply chain concept for a long time. And when it comes to really reaching out and getting from that 1.5 million sort of number that you cited for HP contribution to sort of some of the carbon emissions, and really looking at it, the supply base more broadly, and the contribution that HP partners and suppliers and so forth are making, what would you say are some of the strategies that you've seen being employed to really drive adoption out to the supply base and really get them on board? And my comment really comes from a software-centric perspective. You know, I've been working in sort of supplier management and information, the area, for about 6 years, and I think we're beginning to see software technologies out there. The ERPs have been a little bit of laggards, I think, in really trying to empower corporations to drive sustainability out to the supply base, but what would you see as some of the tools to help make that happen?
Okay, and for scalability, I think we highlighted a couple of the key tools were developing a common framework where it's not HP's view of the world, but making that, think about it as open systems from a software context, right? It's not a proprietary view of the world, it's an open view of the world. The places where we frankly have made the most progress have been in issues around labor practices and environmental health and safety, and these are just the absolute prerequisites for compliance with law and for protection of our brand and the brand of all that are involved in this, right? We've made significant progress. Now, on the energy front, it's probably the next wave where we're going to start to make more progress, and it really begins with our control over our logistics and our control over our packaging materials and our designs, and less invasive really getting inside the operations and telling people how they're going to, their plant engineer, how they're going to design their plant, for example. But energy costs are high around the world, and energy is short around the world, and there's natural economic incentives that are going to drive that. But industry consortia, driving a common set of cultures and vision with the top leadership down to the factory management, and then auditing, and then over time, training and really making that a pervasive part of the culture of our network. I mean, those have been the principal levers and tools that we've used.
I'm Perry Gottesfeld with Occupational Knowledge International. HP and many of your competitors have factored that approximately 1 billion computers have been now hooked up and are operating on the internet. And many of the computer companies are now looking at how to sell the second 1 billion computers to the world. They've decided that they just can't sell them in San Francisco and Tokyo anymore, but they have to go into villages and into developing countries and expand those markets. In those places, power is either unreliable or non-existent, and most computers are reliant on lead batteries for backup power or for power in absolute terms. We have been engaged in a process to develop standards, environmental standards for lead battery manufacturers, but we've been unable to engage computer companies as a stakeholder in that process because we've been told that the battery is not something that we generally purchase. Our customers are purchasing that independently. So my question for you is, how far does the responsibility go in looking at the supply chain? Should it include something like the power source, in this case a lead battery, for a computer being sold?
And it's a perfectly fair question and appropriate, and I'm familiar with the challenges in the developing world, if I can say that, around power quality and just the availability of AC power, period. Are you talking about DC power? So the availability of AC power, which our systems are designed generally to operate off of. We're trying to consume an iceberg and really trying to start from the tip. And there's many, many places to focus, and the challenge is where do you focus for the maximum leverage? And so we've chosen to start from the tier one suppliers that we see and to focus on the products that we make. And over time, and with a broader engagement with more partners and more folks in the industry, we might be able to take on the things that are outside of our box. But at this point, and then maybe it's been part of your challenge, we don't see it as a first priority. We're just trying to make systems that actually work and survive and don't have high warranty and failure rates when they're connected to these power sources, which are intermittent and less reliable, and they're operating in environments that are hot and dusty. And that's the first challenge to putting computers in those worlds. And then the next challenge, of course, is having the power there. And maybe that's a business opportunity for some bright mind here in this world that can take that on and make their next hundreds of millions of dollars.
My question is, are there any index tracking how much of how much total hardware are being produced by HP, and that total, how many percentage is being cycled? On top of that, are there any initiative landing our two giant neighbors, India and China, with about 8.5 times more people than us and rapidly modernizing and trying to catch up? America uses about 40% of the world's resource. Now you have 8.5 times more people trying to do that, and it's affecting the climate. So what is HP doing to pretty much set a best practice to land its leadership position and brand equity to help those two blocks basically propagate this recycling or refurbish idea?
Okay, so it's a two-part question. To the first part, do we track the hardware that we build? Yeah, we have very close statistics that we track that, and we track the recycling that we do, I don't think we have a good grasp of how HP products get recycled outside of HP's sphere of influence. I don't think we actually can do that ratio that you asked for, but we certainly understand how much we recycle, but we take back products of other manufacturers in our recycling operations as well as HP products, and we certainly track the denominator of that, you know, how many products we build on an annual basis and have done, you know, cumulatively. I point back to, in terms of, you know, leadership and the brand leading, it's a small thing, but I think it's indicative of, you know, maybe bigger things to come, and broadly HP's trying to take a position of leadership here with the World Wildlife Fund as an example of, you know, multinational NGO, you know, trying to make a difference, associating our brand with theirs, which, you know, trust me, wasn't an easy thing. It wasn't a natural thing to get approved in a U.S.-based corporation, 11 corporation, to associate yourself with an NGO like that. So I think that's an example maybe of risk-taking. You know, I think the problem that you point to is very real, right? And, you know, lots of challenges around this imbalance of per capita carbon footprint between the United States and other countries that have similar aspirations for standard life. I wish I had a silver bullet answer for you, but I don't have that for you today.
I'm Marvin Smith with Global Ladder, and I know I'm the last question before lunch, so I'll try to be as brief and direct as possible. Hewlett-Packard obviously has a huge spend, $50 billion in components and materials. What is it doing about using that spend in terms of creating opportunities in the developing world? In other words, you've got 600 suppliers who are obviously are very large companies. Is it appropriate for a company like Hewlett-Packard to use that spend to try to create opportunities for small and developing suppliers in the least developed countries, such as Bangladesh or Burundi?
Is it appropriate? I'm going to answer your question kind of in a theoretical way, if you forgive me, right? Is it an appropriate thing for us to do in the spirit of corporate social and environmental responsibility? Yes, it is. And it's something that in the U.S. we're very active with. Small and minority-owned business development is a core part of what HP does, you know, I think exceedingly well in the U.S. and increasingly now in Europe. Now it's now garnering the resources now to try to take that and take it out to places where we operate less directly. We're operating through intermediaries is maybe the challenge. But is it an appropriate thing for us to want to do? Yes. Are we actively doing that today? I couldn't point to it. But it's something that should be part of our agenda and all of our agenda in the room, not just HP. Yeah, I think the answer is yes.
Well, thank you again, Tony.
Okay.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this presentation from the Responsible Supply Chain Conference.
At the Graduate School of Business, we work hard to educate leaders to solve the world's toughest social and environmental problems, all of which are felt sorely in most industries' supply chains. Our center partners with the Global Supply Chain Management Forum to explore, document, and share best practices in responsible supply chains.
To join us for the next Responsible Supply Chain Conference, register at gsb.stanford.edu/ser.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Jeff Kirkland. Our website editor was Marguerite Rigoglioso. The series producer is Bernadette Clavier.
This is Chris Deigelmeyer
and Eric Nee on Social Innovation Conversations. We are looking forward to seeing you at Stanford for the next edition of the Responsible Supply Chain Conference.